Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. Join your hosts, Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter, as we create a brave space for conversations about racism, personal transformation, and accountability. Conversation provides a means to dive deeply into your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs and examine what emerges in your words, actions, and behaviors. The show is a journey towards anti-racism by cultivating change within yourself first and then out into the world. Learn to engage in racial dialogue using four tools: courage, conversation, relationship, and accountability. Discover how truth, reconciliation, and healing can emerge from honest and deliberate conversations. Manifest social change right now on Inflection Point Podcast. So welcome, welcome everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Inflection Point Podcast. I am your host, Anita Russell, and let's get a quick hello from Mavis and Gail.
Hi everybody, I'm Mavis. And I just want to welcome especially all of our white listeners. I appreciate your going on this journey with me. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Gail, and I welcome everyone here too. And I hope you're going to find this to be a very informative and exciting hour for you. Thank you.
So together, the three of us make up the Anti-Racism Mastermind group, and we are your guides on the journey towards anti-racism. We always start our episodes off with a fundamental question, and the question of the hour is, who is free? So before we dive into that, if you saw the last episode, we had this whole entire conversation around this coin analogy that I use. And it's this idea of the dual nature of life in America, where on one side of the coin, the experiences can look like one way. And then on the other side of the coin, the experiences can be something very very different. And so the challenge is for people like Mavis and Gail, who have already accepted that challenge, and that is to stand on the edge of the coin. Because on the edge of the coin is where you can get a bird's eye 360 view into where you are in your space on that coin versus where somebody else, such as myself or my grandson Cairo, would be on the other side of those experiences of life in America. But just standing on the edge of the coin is really not enough. So what's really needed, and what this is really all about, is about you being willing to climb down off of the coin and into the experience of somebody who looks very different from you. Okay, so just hold that thought in mind as we start engaging in this conversation around who is free. So in this land of the brave and the home of the free, and we talk about liberty and justice for all, who among us is really free? And how does that freedom play out depending on what side of the coin you actually may live on? So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to go through some things that everybody, I'm sure, who is listening or watching later is familiar with. So we're going to let Mavis start off with a conversation about the Star Spangled Banner.
All right. Well, I've been told I don't have to sing it, for which I'm relieved. But the last line is, as you all know, "O'er the land of the free and the home of the brave." And the line causes us, as Anita has just described, who is really free? Who is free in this country? The song was written in 1814 during our war with Britain. And the people who were fighting the war, at least white people, were fighting for freedom. But in the end, it's not how it ended up for everyone in this country. I have felt free since I was born, but it's just not the way it is for everybody. And we need to just sit with that idea for a little bit. One thing I've learned about myself is bad news. I'm whiter than I thought. And the other thing is, we really don't know what it's like to be on that other side of the coin, to be Black. So let's just hold that thought for a minute. And that's what we want to discuss further, is just, what is it to be free for everybody?
Gail?
Do you want me to go on about what the Pledge of Allegiance, or do you want me to answer that question? What is it?
Yeah, whatever comes into your mind. Yes.
What is it to be free for everyone? I don't think we have experienced that yet in this country. And my hope is that we are going to be able to, and that for everyone, obviously, most of all Cairo and all the Cairos out there. You wanted me to look at, you asked me to look at the Pledge of Allegiance, the flag, which we have all said how many hundred thousands of times, and probably not even thought very much about it. And the last part of it says, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. But who is the all? And is it really for liberty, with liberty and justice for all? Interesting story that I didn't even realize about the origins of this little pledge that we all are have been asked to say many different places, obviously mostly in school. Originally it was in school. it was actually a marketing ploy. That just a few short years before the pledge was written, Daniel Sharp Ford, owner of the Youth Companion, a children's publication, focused on virtue and piety and launched a campaign to sell flags to American schools. And he wanted a little jingle or a little pledge to go along with it. And so he asked a person to actually write something. It was Francis Bellamy, and to come up with it for about 15 seconds or less. And Bellamy wanted to include the words equality and fraternity in the pledge, but the editors did not want to provide a precedent which acknowledged the rights of Blacks and women. And so they eliminated those words. So, liberty, justice for all?
Not yet, right?
Not yet at all.
Not yet.
Right. So it's interesting. When I think about the Pledge of Allegiance, I've shared this multiple times, that just remembering being in the classroom as a kid, and, you know, kind of growing up into your teen years, and everybody stood up and did the Pledge of Allegiance. And I've shared the story also of what the merger happened with Steel Valley, when Steel Valley was created as a result of the merger between Homestead, Munhall, and West Homestead. This is going back to the 70s. And the very first year that we were in this newly integrated system, I was among the kids from my community who ended up going into the Munhall community, which at that time was known pretty much to be a racist community. And so now here I am, this Black teen, now I'm being kind of forced into this new school system and everything. And it was in that space that I really began to understand that indivisible with liberty and justice for all didn't actually apply to me. And so you may remember the story. I just remember standing outside of the school one day where the school had to be evacuated because bomb threats had been phoned into the school. And those bomb threats were phoned into the school because people like me were in the building. And so when you have moments like that, you just kind of get to this point where you realize that doesn't necessarily apply to somebody who looks like me, because I didn't experience liberty and justice for all as I stood out that outside of that school with that kind of threat. Or if you even go back and look at some of the other stories about forced integration, Little Rock 9, Ruby Bridges, all of these stories and these experiences where we kind of miss the mark in terms of what does it mean to be able to kind of engage in what this pledge or what the Star Spangled Banner is talking about, because it clearly doesn't apply to everybody. And when I stood out there on that grass that day, it just became abundantly clear to me that that did not apply to me. So Mavis and Gail, give me some feedback, stories, whatever, where how that really resonates with you, because I know your experience is a little bit different perhaps than what mine was.
A lot different. Gail, I'm going to jump in because I've got a thought and I don't want to lose it. You know, Anita, I will bet that all of the white kids, or 99% of them, had no idea how you and the other black kids felt. And they were in the room. I'm just coming to terms with the fact that unless you experience it up close, you cannot imagine what that alienation feels like. And when I was talking earlier about realizing how white I am, I just haven't had that exposure in my life. I've always been around white people, even though I have many black friends in my adult life. It's not the same as being with them, as watching them suffer, you know, in that moment from that level of discrimination and fear. I just didn't realize that the journey would be so long for a white person like me to get there. The exposure, I think, is key. And we need to, white people, I think, need to give themselves grace for not being able to understand that right now, that we need to just sit with that idea and let it rest. See how you might feel if you were in that room and were the target of a bomb scare. Mm.
So let me ask you, both of you, this question. When I talked about the coin analogy and literally jumping off of the edge of the coin, because in a way, the standing on the edge of the coin and looking and learning and all of that doesn't necessarily bring about change. The change comes when people are willing to sit down in these types of conversations. And admittedly, it takes courage to really jump off or step off the edge of the coin and into immersion in really immersion. This type of my experiences, right? So talk to me a little bit about, and Gail, I'd like your feedback as well. Like, what does that feel like? Even when you just look at the imagery of just kind of standing in one place and then literally jumping into the experience of Black people, Indigenous people, other people of color, to really be immersed in that, to get a better fundamental understanding of what that looks and feels like.
It's being willing to step into that place of having that conversation, of increasing your consciousness and your awareness of what that would be like. I don't know if anybody that's white can really completely understand. I mean, it's impossible, I think, because I'm not black, but I can certainly have compassion and I can certainly have empathy and I can project what it might be like to have been treated in the way that black people have been treated, not just in the past, but even currently. To not have justice for all, and we just have to look at our own recent history to even know that that exists even still today. But certainly I think we all, if you imagine that any incident that has happened that you are aware of, and imagine that being a white child or a white person of any age or any and male, female, whatever orientation, how would that feel? How would that affect you? Can you then find the level of compassion and then begin to take a step towards recognition of that person being black is still a human being? They are most of all a human being, just as you or I are, and have the same emotions, have the same rights, have the same experience and the same hurts, and the same reaction to everything that's happened as much as you or I would. And so it's beginning taking a step into that place of awareness, I think, mm-hmm. and having those conversations and increasing one's consciousness.
So do you agree that it takes courage to do that?
Yeah. To look in the mirror for anybody.
Oh, yeah.
For anybody to look in the mirror at themselves, to really look in the mirror and see themselves clearly, takes an incredible amount of courage. It's much easier to stay in denial and to not look in that mirror, right? Yes, it takes courage.
Yeah. Anita, is it okay if I just use an example from my experience in Rwanda?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. After that, I want to read you a statement from the Black Declaration of Independence, which was signed in 1970. So, okay. Yes, Mavis, go ahead.
I'll just be quick.
Sure.
I've been going, thinking about this a fair amount and really trying to develop my awareness. And I realized how protected I've been in my whole life, even by my Black friends. So I was thinking about some of my experiences in Rwanda. And early on, I saw a small boy carrying his baby brother, undiapered baby brother on his hip. And to see them and their dirty faces, and to just see their vulnerability, there was no adult around, it just made me weep instantly. And I wept through the night because I was there. I got really, you know, to be in that juxtaposition, we've talked about that too, the exposure, the just being close enough to feel. So, you know, think about that you might read something in the news and you might forget it the next day. We need to hold on to the aggregation of those abuses of the rights of Black people and do something about it.
Yeah, so I totally agree. And you and I have had multiple conversations. So for the audience's benefit, on one of those trips to Rwanda that Mavis is describing, I actually had the opportunity to go with her. And maybe another time we can dig a little bit deeper into what that experience was like for the both of us in terms of just having conversations with individuals who have actually experienced and survived a genocidal moment in the history of their own country and all of that. So I wanted to read the Black Declaration of Independence. And this was issued and signed on July 4th, 1970, by the members of the National Committee of Black Churchmen. Okay. So we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are not only created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among them which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but when this equality and these rights are deliberately and consistently refused, withheld, or abnegated, men are bound by self-respect and honor to rise up in righteous indignation to secure them. Whenever any form of government or any variety of established traditions and systems of the majority become destructive of the freedom and of legitimate human rights, it is the right of the minorities to use every necessary and accessible means to protest and to disrupt the machinery of oppression and to bring such general distress and discomfort upon the oppressor as to offended minorities shall seem most appropriate and most likely to effect a proper adjustment in the society. So those are some pretty powerful words, particularly when you think about the time period in which those words were written. And like we're just kind of coming off of the civil rights movement and, you know, civil rights laws and things like that. But then when we look at where we are in 2021, it's almost as if some of that stuff has been negated. And we talked earlier about this whole idea of protesting and what is the purpose of protesting. Protesting, as Martin Luther King once said, is the voice of the oppressed. It's the voice of people who are having these experiences. And so I just feel like the more individuals who are aware of how this makes individuals feel that it can have some sort of effect. At least that's what I put my faith in, because I have a very strong faith that we really can have a very different kind of future, but it's going to take a lot of work. So comments from Mavis or Gail? So how do those words resonate with you, the words that I just read from this Black Declaration of Independence?
Wanna go first, Gail?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what needs to be there then and now, and it's not quite there. As you just stated, I mean, I can remember in 1970, and I can remember not just doing protesting for different things, for women's rights in the Vietnam War, but also at the tail end of the civil rights, some of the Black Panthers were activating, and initially they were activating to help with children's rights in different districts. So I remember going to meetings, and my friends were saying, what are you doing? Aren't you afraid? And I didn't even notice feeling afraid. All I could think about was these kids and what their purpose and intention was back then. And I think how much has changed and how much hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And so we do need to listen to that, what you've read, and we do need to pay attention, and we do need to get off that edge of that coin and choose a higher state of consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was surprised when I read it the first time that it was written in 1970, and I couldn't point to one thing that was radically different than it is today. Mm-hmm. And that was upsetting. Why not? Why aren't we honoring each other in that way? And I guess the words that struck me just tonight was that Black people have the right to disrupt. I mean, I'm not sure I could go to 10 white people and get 9 of them to say, I agree. There's this sense that, oh no, you can't be going out there and upsetting people. That's just wrong. That's gotta be against the law. You're gonna break things, you're gonna steal things. And I think that, you know, maybe we need to tweet that, the right to disrupt. This is an absolute.
Right. And when I think about like part of what you just said, you know, some people who only look at protesting within that lens of violence and all of that. But that's not what protesting is always about. There's a thing that happens, and it's this thing that is oppressive, and it's this thing that can destroy people's lives. It's this thing that takes people's lives way too early, from children to teens to fathers and you know, aunties and all of that. And it has to stop. It just literally has to stop, because I really don't believe that this country can withstand much more when you think about where we are now, because the foundation underneath everything is starting to crack, because more and more people are becoming much more aware of the reality of these lived experiences. People are becoming more aware of factual information and engaging in these social dialogues. Yes. And that's what's going to produce the kind of change that we need to be able to see.
And, you know, we talked earlier about the whole idea of who is free. We should just try to imagine, what would this country be like if everyone were free? Mm-hmm. If everyone were free, we would have a lot fewer trials. You know, we would have just so much less upset. We would have access to so much more talent. So many more families and connections and little kids who are not afraid. I remember being a kid. I didn't go through what you did, Anita, but I was terrified. You know, just going to school, different senses of things. And I think about the kids that are getting shot in schools now. I mean, add all of that on top of the racism. It's just overwhelming. And I'm concerned about the psychology of our kids growing up in this kind of environment. We need to stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, again, just kind of digging into this particular topic and all of this conversation that we are beginning to have, and this idea that things can be different.
Mm. Absolutely.
They really can be different. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency, I think, we've had these conversations about intellectualizing things, right? And we've had these conversations about how people have a tendency to sometimes look at like the systems that we have in place, that those systems sort of created themselves, that they were somehow, you know, they just were
there.
The way
life is.
Yeah, like that's just how it is, but that's not true. Those things were created by, they came out of the minds and the thoughts and the ideas and the beliefs of individual people. Mm-hmm. And so enough thoughts and ideas and beliefs and thoughts that are beginning to shift in a different direction are what we're going to need in order to be able to sustain this country and to really be able to move forward. And one thing that I will say is, when I talk about freedom, I'm not talking about the freedom to do whatever it is you want to do, because we all know that with freedom comes responsibility and accountability. And accountability is one of the things that we're going to talk about in the next segment. But for right now, we're just going to take a quick break and then we'll reconvene and continue the conversation and talk a little bit more about the idea of accountability as it relates to freedom.
Are you tired of waking up and starting your day already feeling overwhelmed and anxious? Join me, Laura Goldstein, for Coffee with the Universe, where we talk how to start the day feeling calm, collected, and confident instead. Tune in every third Tuesday of the month at 2 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit www.cwtu.net for show details.
Guess what? You don't need to wait until the new year to set new goals for yourself. Hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, the host of Awareness to Action, and I'm taking this concept to a whole new level. I've developed a program to take your awareness to action in 90 days. Let me introduce you to your day one. Day one can start any day you choose, so why not now? We will use powerful brainstorming, mastermind, visioning, and goal-setting techniques to open your awareness of what you really want in your life and take action with intention to get there. Choose to work with me one-on-one or in a small group. Let's connect, lift each other up, and hold each other accountable. I'm offering a free consult to design your program. Visit my site, peacefullyhealing.com, to connect with me, and let's find out when your day one will begin.
Do your ADHD tendencies get in the way of you doing what you intend to? Traditional strategies for getting things done may not work for you. You need solutions tailored for your unique brain. In Bonnie Minku's training membership program, Productivity Pathfinder, learn ADHD self-mastery step by step at your own pace in a supportive community with live online options each week. Learn more about Productivity Pathfinder at thrivewithadd.com.
Tune in to Living Excellently. Become your masterpiece, aligned in heart, mind, and spirit with Gina T. Joining Dr. Pat each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show is changing the world with an essence of love, joy, compassion, and grace. Spiritual coach Gina T helps guide you to live life generously, love lavishly, and trust unconditionally. For more information, visit GinaTCoach.com.
Excellent. Welcome back. So we're going to continue the conversation. We were talking about this whole idea of freedom. And one of the things that we talked about a little bit on the break is the fact that when we're talking about freedom, I want to be very clear that I'm not talking about absolute freedom, that a person just has the freedom to just do absolutely whatever it is they feel they want, need, or should do. What I'm talking about is freedom that comes with responsibility and it comes with accountability. Because whatever your perception of freedom is, it never gives you the right to infringe upon other people, right? And so this whole idea of freedom is not, like I said, it's not intended to be something that we view absolutely. It comes with responsibility and it comes with accountability, not just to yourself, but to other people. So I wanted to make sure that I kind of threw that out there just to make that clarification. Okay. So what we're going to do now is, again, if you've been following Inflection Point Podcast, you know that my grandson, Cairo, is kind of at the center of these conversations. So I'm going to get this segment started with a quick video of Cairo, and then we'll get back after about 50 seconds or so. My grandson, Cairo. And I would say that most people who see that video will comment and say how cute Cairo is because he's walking down the street. And we have this favorite story that he likes to read, and it's about Pete the Cat and how Pete the Cat's walking down the street in his red shoes and just enjoying life. And so when I see that video, it reminds me of that particular story, because that's exactly what Cairo is doing, in that he's just simply walking down the street and enjoying the freedom of being a human being. And so the question is, at what point does Cairo lose that freedom to simply walk down the street as a human being and not be aware of the color of his skin? Another way of looking at that same question, or another way of reframing that question, is at what point does Cairo go from being cute to being dangerous? And so when I ask that question, it always makes me think about Tamir Rice, 2014, the 12-year-old that was gunned down by a police officer. He was 12, but at some point in that 12-year-old's life, he was two, just like Cairo. And so somewhere along the way, people began to not perceive him as this cute little kid, but perceiving him as something dangerous. So let that sink in for a minute, because that cute little boy that you saw walking down the street in his red shoes, one day, somebody is going to perceive him as dangerous. Mm-hmm. So Mavis Gale, what does that say to you?
Racism says to me, because how many people are watching that have children, grandchildren that are two and anywhere from 2 to 12? And when they look at that 12-year-old and remember them at two and say that 2-year-old is going to grow up to be somebody that's going to be threatening to somebody, course not. Nobody would look at that 2-year-old and believe that. But why would anybody look at that 2-year-old Cairo and think, 12 years old, he's going to be threatening? Why would anybody look at a 12-year-old white or black child and look and say that? Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. But there are so many forces. Sorry. Did you finish your thought?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there are so many forces that are pushing that narrative. Media, movies, things I heard as a young girl about black men. I can't even quote one, but somehow that fear was in me until, you know, I had enough exposure and was in close proximity to more black people. You know, it's just strange how those things get implanted. It's almost like it's in our cells. And, you know, I have to own that, you know, almost unconscious belief. I don't want it. I don't know how I got it. And I hate it. And, you know, just knowing a little bit about hearing Anita's story about Cairo, it doesn't take you all the way there, even though you can look at this little boy and have your heart just open wide. It doesn't, this level of awareness doesn't take you there. This trip is long, I'm discovering, even if you really want to take it. So, you know, how people with brown skin go to dangerous, I don't know, but I'm going to be watching every time I see an example of it. And I'm going to approach, you know, people if I can, just to help raise that awareness.
Well, I think you're talking about it. It comes from imprints. It comes from, it may not ever come from an actual experience or actual direct moment in time, or it comes from people, other people's perceptions and other people's belief systems that are imprinted upon us, just like anything can affect us. And those imprints have drastic effects on us. They've even done studies that they can affect the perception of ourselves, are mostly affected by the perceptions of what we perceive and how that affects our biological cells, let alone our mind and so forth. But that doesn't mean that they're all based in any reality.
Any truth. Kind of fact, right.
That's right.
Right.
And so we have to consciously be willing to open up and seek that truth, right? Mm-hmm. And be open to hearing what that truth is.
Yes. And to receiving it, receiving it, and not, I keep thinking about something you said the other day, Anita, that it's not something I live, I'm not hanging on to it like I want to. And I'm sure my white brothers and sisters can identify with that.
Let me ask you this question, particularly you, Mavis, because you made the statement that said you have these certain things that you have been kind of conditioned to believe, and you're not quite sure where they came from. And so how do you perceive yourself as a person who lives in a nation that's built on the ideology of white supremacy?
I feel worse about it every day. I feel worse and worse about it. And I have to admit, I did not know how that was playing out. I've mostly focused on how wealth plays out, but not racism. And then when you combine the two, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. Yeah. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. That was just a curiosity question. Yeah. So why don't we go through our account? Because we have a list of accountability questions that I'd like to like us to kind of get through. So the first accountability question is this: who among you is willing to care enough about the future of a little melanized boy to step into the conversation to cultivate change from within? So I'd like the people out there who are hearing these words, who are listening to this, watching this, just let that question seep into your very being. Are you, or would you be among those willing to care enough about the future of Cairo to step into these types of conversations, cultivating change from within? Because what it means is stepping into critical self-reflection. Like we've talked in earlier episodes, this idea of what are your thoughts, your ideas, and your beliefs about racism, but really, really digging in there, and like, which is part of what Mavis is experiencing, really getting in there and beginning to understand where those things actually do originate from. Mm-hmm. So that's my question that I want to throw out to the listeners today.
Okay, I'm next up. Here's my question. Are you willing to listen and learn all you can about racism and to acknowledge the disruptive impact it has on our society? So in Dick and Jane language, are you really willing to listen, not just hear it? Are you willing to listen and learn what racism really, really is all about? It's kind of, we all suffer from this overflow of information at us. This is something we not only need to hear, but we need to listen and truly, truly take in. So ask yourself, are you willing to really listen and learn?
And my question is, are you willing to be part of the solution to an insidious problem by cultivating change from within yourself first and then out into the world? And really, really think about that. Sometimes the smallest steps can be the most important steps that we take. And it has to start from within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead with the next one. Are you willing to be immersed in critical self-reflection to understand how your own deep-seated thoughts, beliefs, and ideas that you might have about racism? So more Dick and Jane language. Are you really willing to look inside yourself and notice what you're thinking? I'm going to give that quick example of what happened to me that day in the city, where I was alone in a place that was pretty unpopulated, and a number of tall Black men came toward me. They were just walking down the sidewalk, and my body quickened, and I could feel my heart rate pick up, and that made me angry with myself. And so I said, you are not going to be this, Mavis. You are not going to be this. So as the guys got closer to me, I said, hey, how's it going, guys? And they were so warm and friendly. Hey, how are you doing? And it just melted me instantly. And I was really glad I challenged myself. So some of you that are listening might be able to do that. But here's the epilogue. Anita told me that, or asked me, did I know what those Black gentlemen were probably thinking? Here comes this white lady. Is she grabbing her purse? Is she getting her phone out? Wow, I would have never known that. I would have never known that. So look inside yourself. And when you catch yourself with one of those beliefs, however long it takes, give yourself a little challenge. It feels great, actually. All right, Gail, you're next up again, I guess.
Are you willing to put your faith in a different future? Is that right, or just skip one?
That's okay. Go with that, huh?
Yeah, go with that.
Okay. Are you willing to put your faith in a different future through your words, actions, and behaviors? And I mean, maybe what you just said was being willing to see beyond yourself in those moments and see what is that person that's walking towards you. What are they thinking? What are they feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't do that very often, do we? We get stuck within just ourselves and how they might be actually experiencing us. Even that's a step into self-awareness.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely important as you all are out there are kind of mulling these questions around in your mind, in your heart, in your spirit, that you think about, are you willing to put your faith in a different future for Cairo? Because that's the whole entire point. Are you willing to look at yourself as a generational leader, meaning that the things that you do today are going to impact people like Cairo tomorrow? And will that impact be different, as in anti-racist different? Because that's the whole entire point of why we're doing this work together, is because this is a journey towards anti-racism.
And we believe it's possible. We believe it's possible. We need to start with that, right? Just believing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because we've talked about this before, that I look at this as a groundswell. Like when I look across, you know, the different avenues that people are having these types of conversations, a long talk as an example. Lokhi Mulholland and the work that he does, like those are, or, you know, Ibram Kendi, all of these individuals that are really, or Robert Livingston. I was just reading his book, The Conversation, reading some of that yesterday, and all of this conversation that's really starting to happen around this idea of eradicating racism and moving into this space of anti-racism and really beginning to imagine what that could possibly look like, right? I see that as the possibility is there, but it's not magic. This is probably the hardest thing, one of the hardest things that this nation has been confronted with, because now these issues are front and center in front of everybody. It can't be hidden anymore is the point, right?
Right.
So
I just want to take off on your analogy with another one. I see it, because I'm from the Midwest, a prairie country. I see it like a brush fire. There are tiny conversations happening in different parts of a state, and those brush fires are starting to come together. We're not going to be able to ignore that. We can't and we shouldn't. And that is exciting. That momentum is really powerful. And I believe in the possibilities that are going to come from it.
Yes, yes. And if you think about the, just to kind of sum things up a little bit, and then I'd like us to end by sharing with our audience some of the things that we got going on within our respective organizations and that sort of thing. But the very name of this podcast, Inflection Point, is very deliberate, because an inflection point represents a time of significant change in a situation, a turning point. And in this case, it's about social impact. And we have that X. We spelled inflection point deliberately with the X, because that is like the unknown piece. Because a lot of this is kind of unknown territory that we're going into, with these conversations being as open as they are, and across different groups and things that are, you know, white, black, coming together and having conversations, not arguments, not debates, not opinions, but really digging into what will it take to change this country and make a different future for Cairo and all the other little Cairos that are out there. Okay. So I'm Anita Russell. You know that. I am the name of my company is The Place to Soar. I'm a transformational life coach, and started doing this work just as a result of some things that happened in my family. And you can definitely visit my website at theplacetosoar.com, and you'll find a lot more information about my coaching practice. I have some things coming up. In December, I do a monthly coaching clinic and that sort of thing. So you can find some information on the website about that. And then I'm gearing up for The Place to Soar 2.0 in 2020. So I'm really excited about some things that I have coming down the pike and all of that. So again, just visit theplacetosoar.com. You can find out all kinds of stuff about what I'm into.
And she's into a lot. I'll be a witness to that.
Yeah.
You want to go, Gail?
Sure.
About Oma.
You know, I'm Gail Hunter, and I am a psychotherapist. I have a private practice, and I don't have a website. But I also run a nonprofit called OMA, Center for Mind, Body, and Spirit, but it's virtual. We don't have an actual center. But you can find it at OMA Pittsburgh. It's O-M-A, Pittsburgh.org. And we have a variety of different programs that we do from youth to adults. And if you're interested, just go on our site and take a look. And I've always, always been an advocate of truth and being able to look within ourselves and the ability for each of us to be able to heal individually and collectively. Thank you.
Amen. You know me, I'm Mavis Bauman, and I happen to be president of Seed a Better Life. It's an organization that grew out of a trip I took years ago, Anita and I've been talking about, I've taken several trips actually. I wanted to see how people can end up in a genocidal situation. So I went over there really to learn. I want to know how people hurt each other. And so much what I've learned applies to racism in this country. In fact, I have heard Rwandans talk about the US and what's happening here are othering all the time. So you can check out Seed a Better Life, seedabetterlife.org, and you know, see some of the things that we're up to, what we've done. But I also wanted to share a little brief story with you tonight. And this ties in with our conversation tonight too, the idea of humility. We just need to be humble about who we are and not stop a conversation because we feel like we might have been offended or blamed or insulted somehow. If we do that, we're not going to be able to keep this momentum. And I think we can do it. Sometimes this really hurts, I got to tell you, but it can keep going. My story is my colleague in Rwanda sent me a note a few days ago and said, Mavis, can we feed 7 more families with the money that we raise? And I wrote her back and said, how much does it take to feed 7 more families? And she said, I'm not asking for more. I'm asking if it's okay for the kids we have to share with families who have nothing to eat. So the kids of these families were in school but are so hungry they can't study. So to me, I mean, look at the humility of that. Look at the power that our money and our hearts have. So that's what we're about at Seed a Better Life. Thanks for listening to my stories today. I'm full of them, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm always just so grateful for the audience. And we've been getting lots of really, really good feedback about our show. And there is so much more that will be coming down the pike, particularly as we begin to move into the new year, 2020. We're going to start having guests that will be
2022.
Oh, yeah, 2022. Sorry. So sorry. 2022, as we begin to have guests come on the show. And the whole idea is just to really, really understand and build this awareness of how extensive all of this is, how extensive racism actually is. And just kind of keeping in mind that there is the possibility of it being very different, but it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of courage. We keep using that word courage. It's going to take work. It's going to take courage. It's going to take self-awareness and all of that. But I believe in the human spirit, and I believe that we can do some things that will make this begin to break down. And I have this video that I use, and it's like the word racism in really, really big, like strong iron looking letters. And then all of a sudden it just begins to crumble. It just begins to crumble. And it crumbles. Yeah, it crumbles as a result of this type of work, these types of genuine conversations. Like I said, no fighting, no arguing, none of that. Mm-mm. And so I look forward to you visiting with us in 2 weeks? What's today? Around the 15th or so is when we will have our last episode for the year. And then we'll be getting geared up for 2022.
Yes. Thanks, everybody, for helping us a start. This is going to be wonderful.
It will be. Yeah, Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So don't forget those websites as well. Theplacetosoar.com, Oma Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh with an H, .com, and
seedabetterlife.org.
I'm sorry, seedabetterlife.org and omapittsburgh.org. Yes. I'm the only one that's a .com. in that. So yeah, look forward to seeing you getting feedback. Please, please, please send us feedback. We're always looking for feedback and that. So yeah, I think we're
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth, reconciliation, and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.